Alec Murdaugh giving quite the speech recently in court when he was found guilty, or admitted his guilt, rather, to financial crimes. One of the individuals who was there in court and one of the individuals who helped bring some of those charges against him, Eric Bland. He is with us right now representing many of the victims of Mr. Alec Murdaugh. Eric, I got to ask you, when you were in the courtroom the other day with Alec and the speech, as we will call it, I got to say, what was going through your mind as it went on and on?
First, thank you, Tony, for having me on. I'm honored. Number two, in addition to representing six victims, I also, with my partner, Ronnie Richter, represent Stephen Smith. Mm-hmm. We also represent four of the jurors. So we're pretty knee deep in the Murdaugh matters. I wouldn't call it a speech. I would call it an infomercial, really. Yeah. It was an opportunity, a field trip, so to speak, for Alex to get out and, you know, do what he does best, which is, as a narcissist, control the dialogue and speak. He had a captive audience. He had a right to speak at his own sentencing hearing. What ended up happening, though, Tony, is that he went way beyond the charges that he was pleading guilty to addressing to the court and to the victims. He started talking about the murder, which had nothing at all to do with what we were there in court. He talked to Buster directly, his son Buster, and we know that he did that because Buster has not been phone calling his father or taking his father's phone calls. So he wanted an opportunity to speak to Buster. I don't know if you know it or not, but I actually got up and left and said, you know, I can't take this horse shit any longer. I actually said that, and I shouldn't have, but I said it loud enough for a lot of people to hear it. My partner actually kept me from leaving. When he turned to me after I spoke and my clients, the Satterfield spoke and Jordan Jenks, and then Mark Tinsley spoke and Justin Bamberg and his clients, he turned to me and he said, you know, I just want to clear something up, Mr. Bland. I raised my sons and Maggie raised my sons with the assistance of our parents. Gloria didn't raise our sons. Now, one, I didn't say she raised the sons. I said she had a hand in raising the sons because she had been there for over 20 years. And in fact, Maggie and Paul publicly had said that Gloria was primarily responsible for raising Paul. Mm-hmm. So that kind of teed me off a little bit. But truthfully, when he blamed the murder convictions on SLED, our chief law enforcement division in South Carolina, called the South Carolina, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, when he blamed it on them, the media, and then the financial crimes took the focus away from the actual murderer who's out there. There's murderers out there. When he said that, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I got up and I left. And what this was, an opportunity for him to try to reshape his image. You know, there's a certain image that was left over when he testified at the murder trial, and it didn't go well for him. He failed here too. It was rejected by everybody in the courtroom. They were actually horrified. I saw the media that was aghast, and the victims felt re-victimized all over again, especially when he said to them, you know, I know you're going to find this hard to believe considering how I betrayed you and I, you know, I took your money, but I really do love you. And when he said that, it really was the words of a dark soul to say that to people that already had said, we forgive you. And I thought that was amazing, the way the victims, to a number, every one of them said in their Christian beliefs that they're taught to forgive and that they have come to peace with it and forgave Alex. Now, I'm an Old Testament guy. I'm Jewish. I don't forgive Alex, and I never will.
Sure.
But I thought it was very magnanimous. But when he dug the knife in and said, I just want you to know I really do love you and I care for you. I mean, how do you care for people when you're stealing from them at the worst times of their life, Tony? I mean, you know, this was not a faceless crime like Enron, you know, where you're stealing from shareholders that you don't know. These are people directly in front of you that you're looking eye to eye. You know them. You know, my one client, Ginger Hadwin, had known Alex since grade school. Jordan Jenks, they were best friends since they were 8 years old. And when I say best friends, they were thick as thieves together. In a good way.
Yeah.
It was horrific. It rang hollow. I have not heard anybody on a national stage, you included, anybody else, who said, hey, he moved the needle more to his side to to feel empathy for him. I have not heard anybody say that they thought that did him any justice. I'm interested in what you think.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a very bad attempt at trying to move the needle, but strictly from a narcissistic perspective, can you tell us exactly what he was doing? It was so interesting to me what he was trying to connect in there, almost to make it seem as if it was more justified or better, or especially when he was talking about how closely he was connected to these individuals. You would think if it was strangers, you know, not that makes it any better, but the fact that he's saying, "You're all so close to me back when we were buddies here and there, and we did all this together, and then I took all this from you, and I'm so sorry." Right. It just made it even more disconnected from reality of what he actually did to these people and the trauma that he inflicted upon them.
Listen, George Jenks is a big guy, and yeah. I didn't know whether he was going to jump over the rails. I didn't know what he was going to say, and of course, he's now a councilman, so he's obviously, you know, watching his P's and Q's, but he's a pretty tough guy. And he's been very upset, as you can imagine. Yeah. These kids were on swing sets together.
Yeah.
And he took $150,000 from them. And that's a lot of money, you know, to hardworking people. Remember, he took money from people, Tony, at the worst in their life. Yeah. They lost a loved one. They either lost a mother or a father or a wife or a brother, like the Plyler sisters lost a mother and a brother. The Satterfields lost a mother. The Hadwins lost a sister. You know, these people needed that money to, one, to be able to live, to get medical care. He actually took, I don't know if you know this, $125,000 from Thomas Moore, who is a highway patrol officer in our state. He was a client of Alex's, and he had a workers' comp case. And Alex took $125,000 from a highway patrol officer, and he was going to retire, but he couldn't retire because now he needed to work to be able to repay the medical bills that he owed.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't make this up.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.